Penguin Random House Audio presents Young and Restless, The Girls Who Sparked America's Revolutions, by Maddie Kahn. Read for you by Eunice Wong. What wild and unearned luck to have been born to parents who believed that there were no limits to what a girl could do, and who once let me shop for a coveted and overpriced Madame Alexander doll in a feverish haze. I am so grateful on both counts. This book is dedicated to them. I love to see a young girl go out and grab the world by the lapels. Life's a bitch. You've got to go out and kick ass. Maya Angelou. How can you say young girls don't get it? They're our future. Our future doctors, lawyers, mothers, presidents. They kind of keep the world going. Harry Styles. Introduction. In 2017, I wrote an article for Elle magazine about the prospect of a women's museum in Washington, D.C. The proposal had been in the works for decades. The pitch had stalled. Under the then president, the federal government did not seem to feel that immortalizing women's contributions to American progress was one of its top priorities. But the would-be institution still had its backers, who were determined to see it realized. In a show of political spin and blind optimism, some believed a new museum could even be a bipartisan effort. For the piece, I tailed Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney of New York, one of the museum's most committed advocates. In press releases and at events, the Democrat explained that women's achievements had been diminished and overlooked for centuries. The writers of our historical record have tended to be men. In conventional meditations on power and influence, women were absent. Were it not for the painstaking work of more recent scholars, who knows whether women would ever have begun to be restored to their place in the narrative? The Congresswoman wanted to build a shrine to what women had accomplished, and she wanted it on prime real estate. Because I spent several weeks following Maloney around, I heard her make her case for the museum more than once, and to several different constituencies. A stump speech for an institution. In her remarks, delivered at luncheons and on street corners, Maloney would mention the kind of women who would be included in a museum like this one. She enumerated the credentials of people like Harriet Tubman and Eleanor Roosevelt and the tennis iconoclast Billie Jean King. She name-checked writers and artists, politicians and prize-winning scientists. She invoked the nation's children. Shouldn't there be a museum where little girls could see what their maternal forebears had accomplished? It was around this point in her presentation that she cited the example of Sybil Ludington, a literal trailblazer at just 16. The name, for me, for her audience, drew blanks. Even now, when I attempt to reconstruct the list of bona fide girls I learned about in school, I don't get far after Sacagawea and Anne Frank. Do fictional girls count? If so, I can add several romance-addled teens to the total. I heard Ludington's name 3 or 4 times before I decided to be a responsible journalist and look her up. I Googled and was impressed. Legend had it that in 1777, she outrode Paul Revere as she traveled on horseback over bad roads and in a deluge of rain to warn the troops in her father's militia. The American Battlefield Trust, an organization that exists to fund the preservation of sites of American bloodshed, recounts her ride in a sweeping narrative. It frames her as a brave and headstrong daughter of the colonies, who, unlike Revere, was never captured. I did know Paul Revere, a household name and a staple of lesson plans about the American Revolution. But Ludington had been passed over in the textbooks. She was immortalized on a United States Postal Service stamp printed in 1975, but she has otherwise never gotten her due. I felt a little miffed, a little outraged. Where was her museum, I wondered. Where had Ludington been when I memorized the details of the Siege of Yorktown? I had learned other lessons. Was I in 1st or 3rd or 10th grade when I internalized what girls were and were not supposed to do? Did I even need to be taught? I had been a superlative and dutiful student. I was rewarded with good grades and effusive report cards. I was a pleasure to have in class. I was obedient. I waited to be called on. It never occurred to me that I might want to speak out of turn. People listened to me when I talked. I wasn't conscious of it then, but I must have expected the world to continue to reward that kind of compliance. As I sketched out the proposal to write this book, a historical account of girls' roles in American protest and a rigorous look at how the tropes of conventional girlhood have made them such able activists, I remembered Ludington and her treacherous ride. It seemed to me that both her feat and her subsequent disappearance from our historical texts summarized in one dramatic anecdote precisely the issues I wanted to consider. She was a girl who had assumed a set of responsibilities that made grown men balk and whose apparent impulsiveness drove her to greatness. She had a name too few people knew. Ludington remained obscured, is how the American Battlefield Trust puts it. Hers was just the kind of narrative I hoped to include. It lent credence to a hunch I had started to formulate, that girls have been a foundational and underappreciated force in moments of American revolution, both literal and metaphorical. I wanted to explore how girls have shaped the social and protest movements that continue to refine this still-in-progress nation, not because I believe that adults should be more like children, but because I know that in the process of learning how the world works, we sometimes forget that we can remake it. There were more obvious examples than Ludington to reach for: the girls on the forefront of climate activism, the high school students who risked their lives for civil rights, labor reformers and feminist radicals. I would get to them later. What the Ludington example seemed to offer was something closer to biblical justification. From the founding of the United States, girls had performed these crucial, unsung duties. Ludington was like a prophetess to me. I was a New Yorker with a terrible sense of direction and no driver's license. She was a rabble-rouser before the advent of GPS. I was enthralled. It took about 10 minutes of digging into the research to hit a snag. New work had cast doubt on the idea that Ludington had ever undertaken that pivotal ride. A paper published in the New England Quarterly found little evidence of her expedition in contemporaneous accounts or in the books published in the aftermath of the war. Her trip appears to have first made it into the public discourse in 1880. Ludington's descendants provided another account in 1907. Paula Hunt, who wrote the skeptical article, points to Ludington's exclusion from anthologies of women in the Revolution as evidence that she never rode. I understood the claim, but I couldn't accept it. Ludington's supposed expedition, and her omission from the kind of histories that Hunt cites, resonates because it speaks to the fate of countless women and girls whose stories we don't know. Did her absence from the record prove that she never did embark on that ride? Or was it rather that, in her era, no one had cared to write it down? Perhaps Ludington set forth just as the USPS would have us believe. Perhaps there are discrepancies in our inherited accounts. Perhaps the truth bears no resemblance to the tale, as a certain congresswoman tells it. But Hunt has made one incontrovertible point. In her reconsideration of Ludington, she names the desire to call girls back from historical oblivion. Ludington appealed to people because she could represent their values and beliefs about America itself. Without hard proof or more specific biographical detail, Ludington has been left open to interpretation. She has been made moldable, as adults so often envision girls to be. As the Cold War dragged on in the 1950s, she could function as a patriotic, pro-America teen, a feminine rebuke of communism. With the rise of second-wave feminism, she was remade as an icon of independence. For one congresswoman, her gumption justified the construction of an entire museum on the National Mall. Who was Ludington? Whom had we needed her to be? The more I read about her, the more I craved a definitive answer.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?